Okay, so the Gospel of Mark, the Gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, as he says in verse 1 in chapter 1. We've been covering that now for, I don't even know the number of weeks, about 8 or 9 weeks. But we're in chapter 13. Just to give you a little bit of context to what's happened recently, we're into the last week of Jesus' ministry. He has entered Jerusalem, and you know, you could say that beginning with the triumphal entry into Jerusalem, that basically is the story of the judgment of God on Jerusalem. It's quite a confrontational meeting between Jesus and the leaders of the Jews in that last week. The triumphal entry itself was confrontational. It was him coming in riding on a colt. With the crowds shouting Hosanna, you know, the Son of David coming to rule in Jerusalem, and you know, the palm branches. It was the image of a king coming to take his reign in Jerusalem, and obviously for the Jews who thought that they ruled in Jerusalem, that would have been quite a challenge. So beyond that, you know, he comes in, one of the first things he does is curse this fig tree for not producing fruit. And yes, he does describe that as a lesson in faith, but he cursed a fig tree for not bearing fruit as he came into Jerusalem basically to announce its destruction. So I think that there's a message in that. He came in and immediately after that, he cleanses the temple. He basically drives the money changers out. You know, quite a confrontational kind of thing to do. This was not being it's not the politically correct thing for him to do, obviously, right? In that context, he came in very disruptive, cleansing the temple. Repeatedly, they tried to trap him with questions, and he basically humiliated them publicly. You know, they were asking him about, you know, should we pay taxes to Caesar or not, trying to trap him. They were asking him about questions about the resurrection, a highly controversial subject in Jerusalem at that time. And he basically, you know, they were trying to trap him, but he humiliated them. And then we had he gives the parable of the vineyard. It says that the parable of the vineyard, obviously you had the series of servants taking care of the vineyard, and they all were, you know, he would send people to them to try to get them to do better, and then they would kill them, and then finally he was going to send his son, and so Jesus was portraying himself as the son of the owner of the vineyard being the Jewish people, Israel. And so, you know, here he is portraying himself as the Son of God, in effect, in this parable, and saying that we're going to take this vineyard away from you, Jewish rulers, and give it to someone else. And who was that going to be? Now, it's going to be the apostles, right? So it's a parable, but he's telling them, basically, this is the end for the Jewish rulers. You know, this is coming. He's not giving them a warning. He is giving them a sentence. The judgment has happened. This is the sentence. It will be enacted. It will happen. So that's what's happening here in chapters 11 and 12. And so that sets us up for chapter 13 when we're going to talk about the destruction of the temple. Okay. Chapter 13 of Mark covers the same material as in Matthew chapter 24 and in Luke 21. Three different passages that talk about basically the destruction of the temple, where, you know, we're the things we're going to be looking at. But what we need to do is, you know, look at some differences in those three passages. We did a previous class on Matthew 24 in November of 2015, and I've asked the website people to put a link to that material alongside the link to this material so that you can go in and compare them and study them, because I think there's some important things to learn from the differences in those passages, and we'll talk about that. But let's compare those passages. All three of them basically start with the same message from Jesus. And here's the message as it is in Mark. as he was leaving the temple, after telling, after giving those all that confrontation with the leaders, as he was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings." "Do you see all these great buildings?" replied Jesus. "Not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." Talk about being disruptive. Here he is prophetically telling the people that this, the temple, the main piece, the place at which the sacrifices are, where the Holy of Holies is, where the Ark of the Covenant with the Ten Commandments written by the finger of God inside them, all this was going to be destroyed, taken away. It was going to be gone. With the temple gone, there is no way for Jews to practice the law. There's no place there for the priests. There's no place there for the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. It's going to end. And so he's saying that, basically at this point, he's saying, okay, this is not a warning. This will happen. It didn't happen immediately, but it was going to happen. Okay. And, basically not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. This can be nothing but the destruction of the temple. The temple would be gone. Okay. A shocking proclamation. Here we have a picture of, it's actually a model that was done of what the temple would have looked like at that point in time based on the descriptions we have passed down to us. And it was quite impressive. You can see here the door to the outer, you have the outer court and the inner court, and then the Holy of Holies inside here, where only the high priest could go once a year. But this was the temple, and it was magnificent, although not as magnificent as the temple that Solomon had built, which was destroyed by the Babylonians hundreds of years before. This was the temple as rebuilt after the return from Babylon. So at any rate, this was going to be destroyed. Not one stone on top of another. It was going to be completely razed to the ground. So when Jesus said this shocking thing, obviously the disciples wanted to know more. Now, in the three passages, there's some slight differences in how it describes which disciples. Mark specifically names Peter, James, John, and Andrew as the ones that came to him and asked the question. But in Luke and Matthew, it's just kind of generically the disciples or some of the disciples came to him. And so there may have been more than one occasion or more than one conversation described in the different Gospels. But the disciples came to him wanting to know more. In Matthew, it says in 24 verse 3, remember we're studying Mark today, but this is what Matthew says. It says, "As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. 'Tell us,' they said, 'when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?'" Okay, so several questions there, right? Mark, it's a little different. In Mark 13, verse 4, it says, "Tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the signs that they are all about to be fulfilled?" Okay, so that's a little different question. And Luke, in Luke 21, he says, "Teacher," they asked, "when will these things happen, and what will be the sign that they are about to take place?" So I think it's important, as we're getting ready to try to understand the answers he gives, it's important to understand the differences in the questions. I think that's highly significant. Let's take a look at that. Matthew, again, there was three questions. It says, "When will this happen?" What was this? The destruction of the temple. He just said all these stones are going to be torn down. And they say, "When is this going to happen?" Okay. And then they say, "What is the sign of your coming?" Now, that's an interesting question to follow on from what Jesus had said. What is the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? So it kind of seems, maybe there was a little confusion on their part. They kind of thought these were all the same thing. When is all this going to happen and what are the signs? But they asked about the signs of your coming and of the end of the age. All right. Mark says, "When will these things happen? And what will be the signs that these things are about to be fulfilled?" Which is a different question, right? And Luke says, when will these things happen, and what will be the signs that these things are about to take place? So if we compare across the Gospels, the first question is the same question, right? When is the temple going to be destroyed? They wanted to know, when is this going to happen? Okay. The second, you know, in Mark and Luke, the second questions are essentially the same question, right? What will be the signs that these things are about to be fulfilled in Mark and in Luke? What will be the signs that these things are about to take place? That's the same question, right? Okay. So we have, in Mark and Luke, we have more focused questions. And so therefore, in Matthew, we've got some different questions. What will be the sign of your coming? It's kind of a, you know, a different subject, right? And the end of the age. That's a different subject. It's not about when's the temple going to be destroyed. Okay. So those are different questions. And so, as a result of that, Matthew records answers to different questions. Okay? There's, you know, there's partly the same question, but partly different questions. If you want to go through Matthew and figure out which parts pertain to the temple and which parts pertain to the second coming, you can go to Mark and Luke and see what did they cover and what did Matthew cover. What's the difference? The things that Matthew covered that Mark and Luke didn't cover are the answers to the questions that Mark and Luke didn't ask. Okay? Does that make sense to you? I hope I didn't tie a knot with that. You know, a lot of times when people study this, they take all three accounts, they merge them together, and then they try to understand it. But when you merge them together, you obscure the distinctions that he draws by putting three different accounts, right? So I think that by looking at the separate accounts, you can understand all of the accounts better. So that's what we're going to try to do today. So again, Matthew answers, he gives answers pertaining to the destruction of the temple. I just lost my monitor. Okay, thank you. The destruction of the temple, he gives answers pertaining to the second coming of Jesus and to the end of the age. So Matthew's going to cover some things that Mark and Luke don't cover. Okay? Mark gives answers that pertain to the destruction of the temple, because that's what the questions are. So when somebody received Mark's gospel and they read it, they saw questions about the temple. They saw answers about the temple, and they were not confused. Okay? And similarly with Luke. Luke, when people got his gospel, they saw questions about the temple. They saw answers about the temple. Okay? And what you'll find when you go to Matthew is a great deal of what he writes in Matthew 24 is also about the temple. And then at the end, he talks about the his second coming. So Mark and Luke provide a key to understanding Matthew, which things pertain to the destruction of the temple and which things pertain to the return of Jesus at the end of the age. So let's take a look at some of this stuff. Okay? In today's class, we're going to talk about Mark. So we're not going to go into the end of the age and the return of Jesus. We're just going to show things that pertain to the temple because we're studying Mark. But back in November 11th, as a midweek class, we did the class on Matthew 24. And I've asked the folks that do our website to put links to that material alongside this material. So you can look at both classes. You can listen to both classes and piece that together and understand the differences. So hopefully that'll be helpful to you. So let's look at these signs, he says, in Mark chapter 13, before the destruction of the temple. So they ask for signs. When is this going to happen? Well, first he says, in verse 6, he says, many will come in my name, claiming, I am he, and will deceive many. So there's going to be imposters coming, saying they're Jesus. Or they're prophets sent from Jesus that are not. They're going to deceive many. Okay? Verse 7. He says, when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. And again, wars, Rome was at war continuously during the first century, around with all of its neighbors. So that's clearly in secular history, we can point right to that one. Who can think of an earthquake that's talked about in the Bible that happened before the temple was destroyed? One earthquake happened right after Jesus' crucifixion, right? Okay. Another earthquake happened when Paul was in prison in Philippi, right? Okay. And I'm sure there were others, but that's at least two. Okay. But he says, when you hear about those things, don't worry about it. That's not the end. And famines. Can you think of a famine that's talked about in the scriptures during the period after Jesus? Yeah, there was a collection for Jerusalem when they were having a famine that Corinthians, they were taking up a contribution. There's also in a famine during the reign of Claudius in Acts chapter 11 that's referenced where, they were another collection. So, but anyway, you're going to hear about those things, but don't be alarmed. That's not the end yet. But those are things that are going to happen first. Then he says the apostles are going to be persecuted and arrested and testified before rulers. You think of any times when that happened? Basically half of the book of Acts, right? They spent a lot of time in prison, he says in Mark 13:9, he says, you must be on your guard. You, he's talking here to James, John, Peter, James, John, and Andrew, right? They're the ones who came and asked this question. He says, you must be on your guard. You will be handed over to the local councils and flogged in synagogues. On account of me, you will stand before governors and kings as witnesses to them. So we saw this happen, the apostles being persecuted, arrested, and testifying before rulers. So we know that happened before the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. He says the gospel has to be preached to the whole world. The gospel must first be preached to all nations, he says, Mark 13:10. So there's at least three passages in the New Testament that proclaim that actually happened during the writing of the New Testament prior to the destruction of Jerusalem. The destruction of Jerusalem historically happened in the year 70 A.D. So all of these things happened before that. Gospel was preached to the world, and you could, for example, Colossians 1:23, the second half of that verse says, this is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, have become a servant. Okay, now you might say, does that literally mean every creature? Does it really even mean every person? Maybe. Or maybe it means every, it's kind of a hyperbole. It could be that, but whatever Jesus meant when he said it is what it meant in Colossians 1, right? It was basically, this is saying that what Jesus was talking about has been done, okay? So that happened. And then he talks about in verse 14 a really interesting phrase. He says, when you see the abomination that causes desolation, standing where it does not belong, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Now, we're not going to go into studying the book of Daniel here today, but we did in the Matthew 24 class. And so that material will be on the website, and I invite you to go listen to that. I went into some detail to show how Daniel in chapter 9 was talking about that last week of Jesus' ministry, and then he was talking about things that would happen after that, and the abomination that's where this phrase comes from, the abomination causing desolation. So you hear about that all the time in people that play mind games with the prophecies, but it's talking about something that happened at the destruction of Jerusalem. Okay, remember that Mark and Luke are talking about the same thing, answering the same questions. Luke says this a little differently. He says, when you see Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, you'll know its desolation is near. Then flee to the mountains. So the abomination that causes desolation involves armies surrounding Jerusalem. Okay, and again, that's the indication of the destruction of Jerusalem. This is an artist's depiction of what he thought that would look like. Here's your armies. Here's Jerusalem, a walled city. And what actually happened at that time was people trying to flee the armies went into the city. Jesus' instructions, which the Christians in the city would have had, were get out of the city. Let me tell you, a walled city is a horrible place to be during a siege. And that's what happened, and that's how Jerusalem was destroyed. So Jesus was giving them a warning, saying, get out. When you see these happen, when you get to the point where you see those armies, get out of Jerusalem. And then he says, there's going to be a distress never to be equaled again. Verse 19, because in those days will be days of distress unequaled from the beginning when God created the world until now, and never to be equaled again. That sounds like pretty bad time, right? Okay, the worst time. Verse 20 says, if the Lord had not cut short those days, no one would survive, but for the sake of the elect whom he has chosen, he has shortened them. So what's he talking about here? The destruction of Jerusalem, the destruction of the temple. He's talking about the siege. Okay, he shortened that time for the sake of the elect. Okay, now how bad was that siege? We have non-Christian testimony from Josephus, the Jewish historian, who says about that time, says, if the miseries of all mankind from the creation were compared with those which the Jews then suffered, they would appear inferior. That's what Jesus said, right? Yeah, so we have the historian confirming that that's what happened. And then also in Wars of the Jews, he says, no other city ever suffered miseries, nor did any age from the beginning of the world ever breed a generation more fruitful in wickedness than this was. So he basically says this was a horrible thing that happened, but it was because of their horrible sin, and basically it was justified. So that was Josephus. But again, in the passage, Jesus said that the world, he says, never to be equaled again. That's, I think, significant, because it's like the world's going to go on. There's going to be other events. Just none of them as bad as what just happened. Okay? Nothing equal to this would ever occur again. The days were cut short so that some would survive, which means people would survive. This was not the end of the world he's talking about. He was talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Okay, verse 21, at that time, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or look, there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform signs and miracles to deceive the elect, if that were possible. So be on your guard. I've told you everything ahead of time. Okay, here he talks about lying prophets again, and there's a link here. You'll be able to get this from the slides where you can read about, again, Josephus talking about the false prophets out there deceiving the people in the wilderness during the siege, trying to convince them that, you know, Jesus was back or something like that. And he says, do not believe it. The point is, doesn't matter who it is, what happens, it's not me. That's what Jesus is saying, do not believe it. Second coming of Christ is completely a different thing. Okay, he's not talking about second coming of Christ here. That's what this tells you. Now, verse 24, in the King James, it says, in those days after that tribulation. You ever heard that word, tribulation? The tribulation? He's talking about those days, that tribulation. That's talking about the tribulation he's talking about in these three passages, these three chapters in the Gospels. He's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. The tribulation happened in Jerusalem when the Roman armies besieged it. That was the tribulation. And you hear all kinds of things about people thinking about, okay, that's about to happen here, or something you read on the news today that's going to, oh, no, it must be coming. It's not talking about that. There's nothing in Matthew, Mark, or Luke about, you know, about a tribulation that's going to happen in the future, in our future. Okay? So again, after this is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, A.D. 70. Okay? Now, but there was going to be some dramatic things to happen after A.D. 70. Mark 13, verse 24. But in those days, following that distress, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Okay? Probably in your Bibles, that's in quotes. Okay? It is, in, at least in the NIV. It may also have a footnote to some passages in the Old Testament. But the question I have for you is, does he expect this to happen literally? Is he saying that right after the tribulation, right after the fall of Jerusalem, that this stuff was happening? Well, I think maybe not. The Jews had heard this before. This was familiar language. This was kind of apocalyptic or prophetic language that they had heard about many other things before. For example, in Isaiah chapter 13, verse 10, it says, "The stars of heaven and their constellations will not show their light. The rising sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light." Kind of the same kind of thing, right? And what was he talking about here? Anybody know? Not a fair question, I know. I had a chance to study it. But that is talking about the fall of Babylon to Darius the Mede in Daniel 5, verse 31 is when it happened. So Isaiah was prophesying about something that Daniel tells about what actually happened. Okay, so did the stars fall out of the sky? Is the sun gone? Is the moon gone? No, those were not literally fulfilled. What he was talking about was a cataclysmic change in their world. All their norms were changed. It's like it went from, you know, the rule of Babylon to the rule of the Medo-Persian Empire. It was a complete, you know, conquering of a people and a replacement of their whole government. And so it was, yeah, the sun and moon and stars referred to those things changing. Everything that made your life, you know, everything you expected in your life changed. Okay? The stars, the constellations, the sun, the moon, those were metaphors for things, big things that were going to change. Okay. How about this one? In Ezekiel 32, verse 7, "When I snuff you out, I will cover the heavens and darken their stars. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon will not give its light." What do you suppose this one was talking about? Again, not a fair question, I know. This was predicting the fall of Egypt after Nebuchadnezzar took Jerusalem, after the Babylonian conquest of Jerusalem. So it's really talking here about the change for Egypt. Okay? And again, the sun's still up there, the moon, the stars, you know. These things didn't happen literally. They were metaphors for the big cataclysmic changes coming to Egypt. Okay? So the Jews had heard all that before. And so they wouldn't necessarily have expected this to be a literal fulfillment. So Mark 13, 26 says, "At that time men will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with power and glory, and he will send his angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heaven." So again, did this happen right after the temple was destroyed? What could that mean? Okay. One theory, this, you know, basically following the distress of those days. Again, he's still talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. That's the question that was asked. That's the answer he's given. And he's going to say in a few verses that all these things were happening while, you know, this generation will not pass away before all these things happen. So he's talking about things that happened back then. But he says, "At that time, following the distress of those days, the sun, the moon, the stars would pass away." Basically, what happened when the temple was destroyed? Their whole system of religion passed away. Their priests, their Pharisees, the teachers of the law, the Mosaic law itself, went away. There's no way to practice it. This was a cataclysmic change of everything they held dear. So yes, that's in this theory. That's what that was talking about. The Son of Man in the sky. Jesus, you know, the last verses of Mark talk about, you know, Jesus went into heaven, he sat down at the right hand of God in heaven. So yes, he's ruling in heaven at the right hand of God. And the angels gathering the elect, what's the word angel mean? It's a messenger, right? Okay, so messengers of God gathering the elect, the church preaching the gospel. Worldwide, from one end to the other. This is not just to the Jews. This is going worldwide, preaching the gospel. And so they're gathering the elect. So that's what we're still doing. Okay, that's what started happening, was actually happening before the destruction of Jerusalem, but now it's like this is the only plan, the only game in town. This is the only plan. The Jewish law, the law of Moses, is gone. So, and you can see this if you're familiar with John Gill's commentary, which is freely available on the internet, you can read his description, which is pretty much exactly what we just looked at. Another theory is that the sun, the moon, the stars refer not to human leaders and rulers on earth, but to celestial beings in heaven in a battle going on in heaven. You'll see examples of this kind of thing in Daniel. I just gave you a couple of verses there you could look at where the angel is talking to Daniel, and he says, I got to go back and fight this guy, you know, and, you know, these battles, you know, I was detained for a while fighting this other guy. So, those things could be referring to beings in heaven. Okay. You know, we cannot rule out that this is talking about also the end times. There could be a dual fulfillment. But Mark 13:30 says, I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Okay? All these things. Okay? So what is the message for us? Okay? Verses 35 through 37 is he says, therefore keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back, whether in the evening or at midnight or when the rooster crows or at dawn. If he comes suddenly, do not let him find you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch. Okay, so this, he says, what I say to you, those four disciples, apostles, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, he says, I say to you, I say it to everyone. That's to us too. Be ready. In the context that they were talking about, it was like, be ready, get out of Jerusalem when the Romans are out there, when the Roman armies come. Be ready. Don't get caught in Jerusalem. But there's a broader application of that, because he says to everyone. Okay? And I think that, when does Jesus come back to you and me? He may not come back in our lifetime in the ultimate sense, but he will come back. He's been coming back for individual Christian souls, for couple thousand years now, right? So, the point is, be ready. Because you don't know when that's going to happen. Okay? What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch. So what if you knew that Jesus was coming back this afternoon? Or maybe coming back for you this afternoon? What would you do differently? What he doesn't want you to do something differently because you've seen some sign. Okay, now it's time to get ready. He wants you to stay ready. Okay? So are you ready? How do you feel? You've got a judgment. You've got an appointment with God. You can't avoid it. You will face God. You will have that appointment. How's it going to go? How is it going to go? This whole chapter is a chapter of judgment on Jerusalem. He was not warning them. He was telling them this is going to happen. It was not like change your behavior or it's going to happen. This was going to happen. Individuals there could repent and be saved. But this judgment was going to happen. One of these days, you will have that appointment with God. And the message for all of us is to stay ready. And so now, if you're ready, please go pick up your children from class, and we will be back in about 10 minutes till.